And we're very happy to welcome into the studio the superintendent of Napa Valley Unified School District, Dr. Rosanna Musetti. Welcome back.
Hi, good morning.
Thanks for being here today.
My pleasure.
I know you have very little to do now that the school year is underway again. You're just taking it easy, right?
That's right. Yeah, it's a very busy time of year, but it's also the most exciting.
Yeah, of course. Thought maybe a good place to start out is just a sort of once-over status report as you look around the district. I know we have at least one brand new school near our old neighborhood, Snow School, and lots of other changes and improvements that take place during the summer. So as the school year begins, what's the status on things?
Yeah, well, we're really excited. The school year's off to a pretty smooth start. We're on our fifth day here today, and our administrators have really done a great job of making sure our campuses are ready to receive our students and families. Over the course of the summer, we were able to accomplish some of our facilities projects. That's always kind of our window of opportunity to get a lot of that work done. And as you mentioned, one of the most impactful projects is at Snow Elementary. We opened up on time, you know, still got some active construction happening on the campus, but for the most part, I had the pleasure of participating in the back to school night with families last week, and I think that they were just really taken back by the quality of the facility and the improvements, obviously, that have been made building a brand new school. So what, you know, the impact around teaching and learning for that school community will be immense. What's really exciting, though, is that because they're the new school, they were also one of the places that we were able to implement the new version of our technology plan. That was a revision that I did in my first year here in my tenure. And so we revised our technology plan to make sure that we were going to be able to get technology integrated and upgraded technology in all 900 classrooms across the district. So Snow was the first place where we implemented the revisions of the district's technology plan. And so I was so excited on Tuesday. I was there, and every one of the classrooms had their new interactive mobile board, and teachers were using it with families. And so it was a nice little pilot run of what's going to be scaled across the district over the course of the next year. And I think one of the best decisions was you could tell that the teachers had gotten training on how to use the technology in the classroom. So that's one of the big tenets of our new technology plan, is that as new technology lands in the classroom, we want to make sure that teachers don't only have access, and students don't only have access to the hardware, but that we're also getting teachers the professional development in order to maximize the technology integration to really improve teaching and learning for our students. A couple other things you may have noticed that Shear and McPherson Elementary, those are a couple of our sites that had really not been tended to from a facilities perspective. So we also there did some overhaul painting projects for those two elementary schools. So that's been nice to see as you drive by. Many of our schools, you know, have just some basic needs in terms of roofs and concrete and painting. And so it was nice to be able to touch up those two elementary sites this summer. And those will also be McPherson in particular. We're starting also kind of that pilot model as we launch some of the safety and security initiatives that are also part of our Measure H program. McPherson will be one of the first places. It's pretty exposed in terms of, you know, the campus location and its juxtaposition to a park. So we're going to go ahead and use that as kind of our pilot run for fencing. In order to, you know, number one, keep students safe during the instructional day, and then protect the asset outside of school time.
Those security measures, of course, I think were already in the works before whatever the most recent shooting at a school was. But I know that sort of ramped things up, and everybody gets very focused on, well, could that happen here, and the terrible thoughts we have to have around that kind of thing. In a broader sense, what are your feelings about the status of campus security and the whole issues, this modern problem that we have?
Yeah, it's something that every superintendent, school board, leadership team in districts is facing and discussing right now. So it's top priority for us. We have lots of interest as a school district. We obviously want to impact teaching and learning. That's our primary focus, but we have to pay attention to sort of these other components to make sure that, you know, things as fundamental as kids coming to school and making sure that they're safe and that we've maximized all safety measures. So there's a lot of layers to that. Me and my leadership team have been focusing on it since, you know, over the last couple of months in anticipation of some of the Measure H projects that are going to be implemented this year. So we're going to have security cameras. We're going to have a very advanced video security system upgraded that will be on all of our campuses and also all of our ancillary additional facilities, working closely with the Napa Police Department to make sure that we sort of have that integration and connection, because they obviously are a major partner when we're dealing with safety and security issues. So we're really excited about that work, and that work will around the cameras will happen alongside fencing. We're currently assessing our campuses right now from a facility standpoint, but I think what I'd like to highlight for the community is that, you know, we can do fencing and we could do security cameras, but we also have to train our people, right? Our people are critical, because you could put in all the fencing and all the security cameras that you want if we don't have the professional development for our staff, and then the policies and procedures in place to make sure that we're really paying attention to safety, and then holding the system accountable to those policies and procedures. That's really, really critical in advancing the safety agenda. So that's focus. That's a focus topic for us this year. We're positioned from a facility standpoint to be able to execute on things. So while that's happening, we have to simultaneously pay close attention to the people who are involved in making sure our campuses are safe, from our administrators to our office staff to all of our campus supervisors. We have to think about, you know, our cafeteria safe when our food service workers arrive at work, you know, first thing in the morning to serve breakfast. So there's a lot of detail to that, and we're ready to do that work. And it's work that you have to do quickly, because you want to get it done, and you don't want any of our campuses to be exposed. But it's also a mindset shift, because I think I may have spoken about this a year ago when I was here. There's a real sort of open door policy around our campuses here in the community. And so we're also going to have to do a lot of community engagement to make our policies and procedures very clear to the community, and sort of what that might mean in terms of behavior shifts that we need to do as we have to focus more on the safety factor.
You know, it's disturbing the tradition that we have now with social media on the first day of school, all the parents posting their pictures. You know, here's little Janie and Johnny now, mm-hmm. third and sixth grade. It's very cute. You get to catch up on all your friends and sure. see all this wonderful family love. And then at the same time, some posts popped up about, oh, my six-year-old had active shooter drills on the first day of school and things like that. Is that actually happening? Is that a part of the process now in this local school district?
Yeah, protocols, that's standard protocol now for all school districts, and active shooters has been added to the repertoire of drills that our administrators have to hold on their campuses. And so, yeah, you know, it's a balance. It's really, really challenging. We definitely have to do sort of a better job, I think, as we implement these things. We can't implement them robotically. I think we have to have sensitivities to what that means. Like when a six-year-old, you know, comes home and says we had active shooter training. We have community engagement to do around that. In our bilingual community, multilingual community, we have to do it with that in mind as well, making sure that we're making the information accessible to parents. And I'll just be really honest, it's a huge area of growth in the Napa Valley Unified School District. It's something that's going to, you know, it's going to take 2 to 3 years for us to get our systems up and running, and then to also think about the family impact, the student impact, and the community impact as we make this shift and pivot towards increased security and safety precautions given the world that we're living in today. But what I can confidently say is that we're not alone, and that most school districts are facing this reality, sure. and that presents an opportunity for lots of collaboration. So me and my team are going for training at the end of the month. We're putting that in our training repertoire on how to lead organizations through safety and security measures, and how to navigate that. Also, not only from the procedural piece that I described already, or the facilities piece that I just described, but also from the communication piece and the community engagement component of that work. So it is sort of three-pronged in that way. And we have a lot of work to do in that area. So I look forward to rolling up my sleeves with my team and getting that work done, and eventually becoming gold standard around that work.
Mm. you know, it's overwhelming in a sense. There was a time when we talked about school security, campus security. The focus was on very specific mm-hmm. schools and specific areas where maybe they needed metal detectors and things like that, locker mm-hmm. searches, and it was very localized, it seemed mm-hmm. like. Now we have this sort of randomization where you don't know where the problem is going to be.
Absolutely. Very, very challenging. Every school is vulnerable. Every community is vulnerable. We used to be able to think that we could, you know, buy our way through and attain safety. And, you know, it's just there's no discretion now. And so we have to remember that. We have to remember that every community is vulnerable and every school is vulnerable. So we're going to, you know, our commitment is to position the school district to make sure that, you know, we're doing the best job possible in that area.
So the big conversation in the school district in this last year now has become declining enrollment, mm-hmm. the connected loss of revenue, mm-hmm. and the impact that that has downstream, as it were. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about, as you said, you're only 5 days into the school year. You don't have your verified numbers. You mm-hmm. told me off the air. But what is your knowledge about enrollment right now and where we stand compared to a year ago or the mm-hmm. average?
Yeah, so we've been looking at our statistics. We've been looking at the last 5 years. We have new leadership in the business office, so I've moved over enrollment services over to the business office. And with that transition in leadership, we've been really trying to set up kind of the planning, the financial planning, the program planning based on really good data. So we've looked at our verified numbers over the course of the last 5 years, and I think it's approximately 800 students that we've lost over the last 5 years total. And then that there's a concentrated loss at elementary entry level. So where the concentrated loss of enrollment is, you know, for the most part, families aren't starting in Napa Valley Unified School District. And there's, you know, lots of theories around that, but it's the same reason that a lot of school districts are seeing enrollment loss, where their most extreme hit is at that elementary level, because a lot of families with the lack of affordability in California in general, but then specifically in Northern California, in the Bay Area, in a county like Napa County, many families are saying, I can't start my life here, and so they go somewhere where it's more affordable before they make that, you know, housing decision and that ultimately that school decision. They want to be able to be in a place where they're going to be able to afford things as their family kind of, you know, grows up. And so we're seeing we're just experiencing what's the very typical trend in the broader state of California. Birth rates are down in California in general. Birth rates are down here. And so we're mirroring a lot of the state challenges that a lot of the school districts up and down the state. Really, you know, the concentrated growth areas for the most part are some areas in the Central Valley and in Sacramento where there's still an affordability factor. But outside of that, a lot of school districts are facing the declining enrollment in that same sort of way, following that same sort of pattern. We as a consequence of that, we have to plan, right? As our kinder cohorts come in smaller, our kindergarten cohorts come in smaller, that means we can, assume and project that our cohorts moving through the system are going to get smaller. So right now where we're seeing some that concentrated decline, you know, we've had to consolidate classrooms just at the elementary level because of the things that I'm describing. I think that it's no secret that as a consequence of this intense declining enrollment, approximately, 15 to 20% of it has been at that elementary level. We're having to face the school closure / consolidation topic because we have a lot of campuses for the number of elementary students that we currently have and that are projected to come in, the cohorts that are coming in. We work closely with demographers to analyze that, and we actually, our demographers have had quite a high accuracy rate in being able to predict based on the birth rates that come in and the development. And so there's just not enough development and growth at an affordability factor that can stem that hemorrhage that we're experiencing. So we have to make tough decisions. I've done a little bit of a history walk, and it's a couple decades of solid growth in NVUSD. And when an organization has been growing for a couple of decades, growing their enrollment, which implies growing revenues, you get to run the school district in a particular way. And we know that that enrollment decline started a few years ago. There were signals of it. I think there was probably a hope, like many California school districts, that it would turn, but that hasn't happened. The decline has been steady over the last 5 years, and it is projected to continue as we examine birth rates in the county and in the state. So that means that NVUSD is at a critical period right now where we have to pivot. We have to pivot. We have to pivot in a direction in terms of how we approach the work, how we approach accomplishing good work for students in ways that we historically have not had to, because we've been a growing school district in terms of increasing enrollment annually. And a lot of that growth, most of that growth actually has been due to the development in American Canyon, right? Because we know American Canyon has had explosive growth, but we're even seeing the declining enrollment trends in American Canyon, which has been kind of that historical pinpoint area that has kept the growth and revenue enrollment engine running over the last couple decades. It's no longer true. Based on the data examinations that we've conducted. So it means pivoting. It means making some tough decisions. And I call it sort of right-sizing the district, getting the district the right size. Just school districts get themselves in financial distress and trouble when they were once a school district of 25,000. They continue to run the same exact operation, and all of a sudden they find themselves being a district of 18,000. You know, if enrollment is your revenue lever, how can you run the same operation at 25,000 when you're now 18,000? Mm-hmm. Those aren't our numbers, but I'm speaking really generally. So, you know, we're at 16th, that we're hovering around 16,500 approximately. And in a couple weeks, we'll have our verified number of students who are here, that we've accounted for all the students who've dropped and disenrolled. And then come in October, we have the day, the state day, where we verify what students are enrolled. So that becomes what we call the California Department of Education verifiable enrollment number. That's the number that we'll capture for this year. And at that point, we'll be able to give the community a very strong, firm update on what happened this year. But just based on the scan of who's come to school and whatnot in these first few days, you know, we're looking like our numbers are fairly low again.
Comparing what you described, this choice not to start school here, the economic pressure, the cost of living and all that factor, comparing that to other possible causes for declining enrollment that get mentioned, like private school instead, homeschooling instead, to what degree do those contribute to the issue?
So we can get a perspective. Those are all definitely, I mean, parents have so many choices these days. And that's the challenge. That's the complex challenge in school district leadership that we face. You know, no one wants to eliminate programs. No one wants to close schools. No one wants to, you know, tell families that we can't operate smaller schools. Like, you know, it's not enjoyable to break that news to communities who are vested in programs or schools for their kids. But it's we have to kind of do that work, because if we don't stay financially fit and solvent, then our programs go away. The quality of our programs, you know, we may perceive ourselves to be kind of mid-range in terms of program. I want to get us to be gold standard in terms of program. But if we don't pay attention to sort of our operational impacts, then the quality of our programming, the number of programs we can offer, you know, will become subpar. And then more folks might say, hey, you know, the school district's, you know, really struggling to offer my student programs. And it's, I don't see it or view it as program rich. And then comes in the competition of the private school market, online options for student, for parents and families, homeschooling, like you mentioned. How many parents are leaving for that option? I don't have any verifiable data on that, but of course, as school districts in California in particular navigate the complexity of being the most underfunded one of the most underfunded out of the 50 states, with declining enrollment because of the lack of affordability in the state and in many counties, particularly the ones that have the demographic of Napa County, it becomes hard to compete, right? It becomes very, very challenging to compete. So that's kind of the reason and the rationale for doing the difficult work to make sure that, you know, we're not living on the financial edge. Because when we're living on the financial edge, all kinds of things potentially get compromised. Academic programs, enrichment programs, our ability to execute on safety and security, which we started with, freezing salaries is really not a great go-to strategy, because the other thing that's going on in the state of California is we have a teacher shortage. So if we can't compete with compensation to attract the brightest and the best and retain the brightest and the best, then you layer that challenge into the system. So it's very multi-layered, it's very complex, and we need to get into a place where we feel financially more secure so that we can prioritize high quality program, make those programs better, and then become competition. We want parents to think that before I leave the school district or when my four-year-old is getting ready for school, we want to be a real viable option. And one of the ways that we do that is being able to deliver on stellar programs for our students. Hard to do when you're financially stretched. So it's managing that tension, and sometimes having to navigate very complex, tough decisions to get there for that greater good of the school district. And that's kind of what we're working on today.
We're talking with Dr. Rosanna Musetti, the superintendent of Napa Valley Unified School District, and we're going to take a little break here and come back with more shortly on KVON. We are talking today with Dr. Rosanna Musetti. She's the superintendent of Napa Valley Unified Schools, and our conversation, of course, has been around the start of the new school year, the enrollment levels, improvements at various campuses, and so forth. Let's jump in, if we can, to directly attack this closure question. Mm-hmm. Obviously, having many, many campuses with a small number of students isn't really cost effective. So that's what drives this review that's underway now. Tell us what the process is and where we are in that process.
Sure. So that work formally starts tonight. When a school district is facing potential school closures and consolidation, they erect something that's articulated in the education code, which is called the 7-11 committee. 7-11 referring to just the numbers of participants that can be on the committee, a minimum of 7, a maximum of 11. We went through a selection process. It was great. We had good applicant pool for participants on the committee, and we decided to go with the maximum number. So we wanted to maximize the voices at the table around this critical issue. So we have 11 participants who actually start the work tonight. Our first 7-11 committee meeting is at 5:30. We have 4 alternates as well who will be sort of participating and, if need, step in. So about 15 blend community members. We have an administrator, we have a teacher. We have representation, the 4 campuses that have been identified, right? That's just a kind of a numerical, like which campuses are the small campuses. Well, our average size of elementary school here in the district is approximately 400. That's average. In practice, school districts tend to define a smaller elementary campuses as 300 or under. And there are one or two of the schools, West Park and Alta Heights, have been sort of hovering around 300. Mount George in the twos, and Yountville in the low 100s. So we have four school communities that sort of fall in that category by definition. And we intentionally wanted to study the issue, right? I think in the past there's been discussion about a particular school or a particular set of campuses. And our thought is that given the context that I just described, again, after being a growing school district in terms of enrollment and revenues, and now having to pivot to having declining enrollment, which means declining revenues, that we want to study the issue of sort of small schools as an issue, right? So we're going to be looking at lots of the data, financial data, analysis of enrollment data, who's served in those different schools. Are we serving resident kids, or are we serving students that are from outside of the boundaries of those schools. And so just doing a real sort of analysis to get a real pulse on sort of the landscape of the small schools. And then, of course, looking at all of the operational costs and, you know, what pressures that puts on the budget annually. Those are ongoing operational costs. So, you know, it's kind of like you, when you're in the situation that we're in, right, that I've described, which is challenging, but also a tremendous opportunity to kind of, you know, really get tight on what our priorities are and what's the most efficient way of maximizing our resources. You know, you have to look at this issue. You just have to. Maybe some of my predecessors, when you're a growing school district, you can opt not to look at, oh, let's think about consolidating campuses for operational efficiency, for cost efficiency. You know, you get the luxury of kind of not thinking about those things when you're growing and revenues aren't so stretched. But when the revenues are stretched and when you have had a structural deficit for 5 years and when you have just slightly above what the state minimum is for our reserve, you have to look at issues like, you know, having small campuses, and you have to study the issue. And then this committee, the 7-Eleven committee that will be examining the topic, starts the work tonight. And right now they have 4 meetings scheduled between now and October. The 7-Eleven committee develops a report after studying the issue, looking at the data. And they're an advisory committee, so they'll make a recommendation to the school board, and then that recommendation goes to the school board for action. And then the second layer of work of the 7-Eleven committee is not only will they make the recommendation around potential school closures and/or consolidations, but then they also have the second function, which is if you are going to close a campus, what do you do with that surplus property? So that's all delineated in education code. And so they'll be doing part one and they'll be doing part two if indeed the recommendation is to close any of our schools.
Mm-hmm. If you had to project, what's the likelihood that the committee will come back with a closure recommendation?
You know, I really believe in process, and so, you know, I expect the committee to go through the process. You know, we're going to be presenting financial data, historical enrollment analysis data, and demographic future enrollment projection data. So, you know, I'm going to let the data do what the data is supposed to do. It's supposed to inform the committee, and the committee is supposed to make a data-driven decision. And so, you know, I don't have a crystal ball. I'm not going to make that prediction. I am confident in the data that we're presenting. And so the committee will kind of have to, you know, do its analysis of that. Tonight they'll be choosing a chair and a vice chair and going through that logistic. And then, this committee will go through those learning experiences together and they'll make a recommendation. As you know, I think what's important and what's really challenging, for folks is that, you know, our school board has to think about all of the students in the school district across the 32 schools. We have to think about, you know, we used to say 18,000 kids. Well, we're hovering in the mid 16,000s now, and they have to think about all of those students. And one of the things that I'm really excited about in our future, in our moving forward, is that, you know, we need to start behaving like a system. We need to start thinking not so much about these sort of bifurcated and individualized communities, but as a school district, you know, we're NVUSD. And NVUSD is a great place to be. And a lot of our schools have lots of things to offer. But if we don't have that system thinking at the forefront, what ends up happening is that you design a system that's based around a lot of operational efficiency. You're not getting economies of scale. And that's kind of been the way the district's been operating for a while. And like I said, given the previous context, that was okay. You didn't have to maximize your resources in the way that we're sort of forced to now. So thinking like a system, thinking like we're school district, you know, first, and then what are some of the pieces that we can standardize across all of our schools? I think I even mentioned this a year ago, and it continues to kind of still be at the forefront of our thinking is, you know, when every school is left alone to think about how they're going to get technology on their campus, well, you have a lot of a lack of standardization. You don't have economy of scale, and it's expensive. When you have each individual school, you know, making curricular decisions, you know, maybe for itself, or relying on outside entities to be able to bring resources into the school, it's inefficient and it's expensive. So we can't think that way anymore. We can't afford to think that way anymore. And I know that that's a hard pivot. That's a hard shift. But I think what will happen over the course of the next couple of years, if we can bring down some of our operational costs and we can start to make some strategic investments that impact all of our schools so that people are seeing the benefits of being able to take things to sort of this economy of scale, it'll be really exciting. When we don't have to rely on, you know, parent associations to buy technology for particular classrooms, that's going to be good work. Yeah. That's going to be really good work because, you know, the school, there's certain things that the school district should provide, classroom to classroom, hallway to hallway, building to building, from elementary to high school. And we're not doing the work in a way where we can guarantee that, you know, viably for every classroom, every student. So getting through this and right-sizing the district and making some tough decisions, you know, whether it's the school closure, whether we stop promoting and opening future small schools, you know, because that's also sort of a topic for us. You know, whether, if it's not that, it'll have to be some other systemic reduction, right? Because the bottom line is that our revenues are stretched. If we can make the decisions that bring down our operational costs, then what we'll be able to provide more equitably across the school district will be better quality for all students and all families. And that's our goal and that's our mission. We want to transform lives by instilling lifelong learning in our students. And how can we make that accessible to every student despite what school they attend? That is our goal. So it's exciting work. But you kind of have to go through some challenging times and some potential complex decisions to get there.
Mm-hmm. Do I recall correctly that when the possibility of closures came up, we were talking about those four schools being looked at with the potential maybe that two of them would close? Is that
That's
accurate?
That's a great clarifying question. That comes up a lot. I held a very public meeting around the topic. That's something that I'm trying to do as I navigate the complex situation that I inherited. There was a lot when I did my 90-day, and I'll get to your question in a minute. When I did my 90-day listening and learning tour last fall, what came out strong for internally with staff and outwardly with the community through my town halls was that they felt like the district wasn't communicating effectively. So, you know, in the past, maybe if a small school closure list was put together and a 7-Eleven committee was being launched, it didn't feel like the district was being proactive around getting the message out, about laying out the process, about laying out the what and the why of what was going on. So as soon as we were really clear on the budget circumstance through our budget analysis of kind of where we were over the last 5 years and what the implications of that with the declining enrollment as a factor really, that we really tuned into for the budget development moving forward, we realized, okay, we've got to surface this topic. And in budget development, one of the ways that we balance the budget is we built in some assumptions into the budget. It was an already tight budget, structural deficit 5 years in a row. State required reserve is 3%. We were hovering right over 3. So we had to build in some assumptions to be able to balance the budget for the upcoming year and 2 years out. That's the requirement in the state of California. That's all managed and overseen by the county, local county office of education. Here it's NCOE, Napa County Office of Education. And so one of the assumptions for those out years was that we would close two schools. And that brought over $1 million cost savings, right? And we had several million dollars to reduce. And so that was one of the assumptions that we built into the budget. We also built into the budget another challenging circumstance that we're facing right now. And we have American Canyon Middle School. There was a new proposed construction out in American Canyon. It was promised to constituents during the bond campaign. And so again, we had to have a public meeting sort of saying, hey, the lay of the land has really changed. The enrollment decline and trend is, you know, hope maybe previous administration hoped that it was going to like plateau or turn, but it actually, the slope got steeper. And so we had to kind of come out and surface that issue, that adding the operational cost of a middle school another small middle school when you have declining enrollment is going to put pressure on the budget that could drive us into fiscal insolvency. So we're having the topic, sort of discussing it sort of equitably. This is not like, oh, we're looking at one silver bullet solution. We're looking holistically and comprehensively, like everywhere. And this is not about, it's not a budget circumstance around like, you know, well, let's pause on, you know, some of this low-hanging fruit, you know, save here, save there, pinch here, pinch there. We have to do some of that. But when you're facing the circumstance we are with declining enrollment on the horizon for the next 5 years, we have to right-size the district, and you have to make big decisions in order to stem some of that, you know, financial hemorrhaging. So doing the work publicly is really important to me. Thus, you know, holding community meetings around the topic. I did those around each of those difficult topics. I wanted people to hear from the new superintendent directly. What's going on? What's the issue? What's the problem? What's the dilemma we're facing? And how are we going to navigate and proceed? The school closure meeting was actually on YouTube. I think we did a live stream because it was in the summer, right after kids got out of school. So we anticipated that some families wouldn't be able to attend. Mm-hmm. And it's a high interest topic. So we decided to put it on our district YouTube channel, our new district YouTube channel. We live streamed it. We had over 500 viewers. So obviously it was of high interest. I think at this point we've got like 1,100 views on the video. But doing the work publicly is really important to me, because I really believe that when community and staff have the information and understand the what and the why, despite the challenge of it, despite the emotion behind it, you know, there's some understanding. You know, you at least give people the opportunity to understand the complexity of the problem. So I'm really committed to that, and we'll continue to do the work in that way.
Yeah, there's probably few things in any community, small or large, that will whip up the kind of passion that closing a school whips up.
Yep.
Right?
That's right.
We have loyalties, we have relationships sort of to literally the physical property, the mm-hmm. presence of a school in a neighborhood, and so on and so forth, let alone legacies of families.
Right.
And so
especially
on.
Here in Napa.
Especially
legacy.
Here in Napa, right?
Legacy happens here, it's for
a big
sure.
thing. And, you know, appropriately so, people care and they're connected. Mm-hmm. It seems to me like you've got a rough road in front of you, regardless of what the committee comes up with. If you're in this financial bind, it certainly sounds like this closures probably will happen, and then there's also that sort of domino effect of where do those kids end up? How does that impact the other schools? Contentiousness, I'm sure we can agree on that part. So let's focus on that other impact. If you take, let's say, roughly 500 elementary students mm-hmm. and have to put them into other locations, mm-hmm. what are the impacts of that, and does this committee need to consider that as well?
I'm sure they'll look at that. It's not the function of a 7-Eleven committee, but it's definitely sort of a factor, right? And so the district has to do a really good job of communicating what that means for families if indeed the recommendation moves forward. So we'll have to do a lot of support for families. We'll have to provide that. We're actually hyper-focusing on enrollment. It's one of the key initiatives in our strategic plan between now and 2022. We have to look at enrollment. You know, we want to stabilize, obviously, and we have all kinds of efforts around that in the works. We're going to centralize enrollment so that we have more controls around enrollment, because right now that's just left to the schools in the offices, very people contingent, very paper based. So we're making all of those procedural shifts for the future, in the very near future. So, you know, as we navigate this complex issue and this impact piece, we're going to have to do some high touch with potentially impacted families. But we have, I just because of what I opened up with around the decline happening mostly at the elementary level, we have empty seats all over the district. So we have lots of schools that are positioned to absorb kids. We will still have our open enrollment policy. So many of the families that are at some of our small schools are actually not resident students. They're actually from outside the attendance and boundary area of that school. So they're leveraging open enrollment already to opt in to the small school. And so open enrollment will remain a policy for families to go ahead and exercise that option, because we do, the way we do enrollment now does support choice, right? People have choice in the process through open enrollment, and so they'll have the opportunity to prioritize what their choices are for the future if indeed a closure happens.
You mentioned that 3% reserve that's mandated and being so close to it, and I think one of the points that needs to be emphasized is it's not really an option for you in some of the financial requirements. You can end up in a position where the state starts to get involved.
Absolutely.
And that's probably not real fun for anybody, right? Describe what causes that to happen.
Yeah, so when a school district goes under the 3% reserve limit and they show that they basically can't make payroll and they haven't made the decisions to make sure that they maintain fiscal solvency, then, you know, the state, really through the arm of the County Office of Education, right? Because the County Office of Education, one of their primary functions is to ensure that school districts in their county stay fiscally solvent and are making fiscally responsible decisions. That is a primary function of local county offices of education. So the minute a school district gets into a position where they go under the 3% reserve, they can't balance the budget for the out years, then the interventions begin, and they're external interventions. The county office has to come in, and in extreme cases, then the State Department of Education sort of gets involved, will assign a fiscal advisor to the school district, and then there is no choice around what the financial decisions are. So I always like to tell people it's best when the district can make the tough decisions on their own, because the data shows that in school districts where their fiscal advisors from the outside have had to be assigned to the school district, it's a really hard recovery when you're having to do things from sort of a mandated pressure from the outside. And then often, because it's pushed on the system from the outside, a lot of the culture internally doesn't change, and a lot of the procedures and protocols don't change. And then once that fiscal advisor's gone, a lot of the times you just slip right back into where you were, because the district and the leadership, the community, the stakeholders, the employees didn't own the problem themselves and then fix the problem themselves, right? And so it's never optimal, and that's why so many school districts that find themselves having what's called a negatively certified budget find themselves there again shortly thereafter. And so you just want to avoid that, right? And for me, NVUSD is an incredible place. We have amazing staff. We have incredible teaching staff. We have incredible administrators. We have such a dedication. You talked about legacy. We have such a dedication to this school district because so many of our employees attended school here. They have their children in our schools. There is a lot of internal accountability that comes when people are that vested in your school system, when schools are that important to people, that people care. And so I would really hate for us to not be able to leverage that because we lost control of the school district because we weren't fiscally responsible. That would be really difficult for me. So I have a tremendous commitment, passion, for making sure that we don't get into that space and that we turn this around on our own and come out on the other side so that we can do some of the great things that I think we're positioned to do when you have that degree of support from your employees, the commitment from your employees, and that same degree of support and commitment from your community. And I look forward to working with that after we get through these, what could feel like, you know, turbulent times, because it's worth gold in a school district. I've worked in places where you gotta work really hard to sort of drum that up. And here it comes very naturally to our community and to our employees. So I'm just thrilled about our future opportunity and our future potential. And there's already great seeds of things happening despite some of what I've described. I mean, we're talking about all the challenges, Barry, but we've got, you know, some amazing things happening. I mean, our technology is about to hit every classroom this year. That's going to be great for NVUSD kids and teachers. We are going to, we have our food service program where we're focused on healthy eating. We have a central kitchen. That project got completed over the summer. And so now kids are eating more healthy food. We aim to be a national model in that area where we say, hey, what kids eat at school matters and can impact their learning throughout the day. So that's well underway. Those efforts are there. We're really excited around college and career readiness, and it might seem like a simple act. I think it was highlighted in a recent article in the Register, but we're launching PSAT and SAT days where the school district is having every junior and every sophomore who's going to be able to take the PSAT and or SAT paid for by the district at their home high school with people that they know in an environment, and it's just going to launch the conversation around college and, you know, planning for the future to make sure that our kids are thinking about every opportunity that's out there for them. So there's a lot of good work already happening despite some of these challenges, and the potential for the amazing work still to come once we get out of this financial distress is just incomparable, I think. And so I'm going to keep chipping away at the challenges so that we can get to the other side.
It's an excellent way to wrap things up. Thanks for being here today.
Good. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Rosanna Musetti is the superintendent of the Napa Valley Unified School District, taking on some tough challenges, and more power to you, as they say.
Thank you, Barry.
Let's talk again soon.